Welcome to ACT Radio, Animal Concerns of Texas. I'm Greg Lawson.
I'm Tom Linney.
And I'm Liz Walsh.
Here on ACT, we talk about how we humans relate to other animals.
We talk about how we use them for food, clothing, and entertainment, and how there are humane alternatives to these practices.
And we also discuss why a plant-based diet is the healthiest for humans and the best thing one can do for the environment.
So if you're concerned about the environment, if you're concerned about your health, if you're concerned about the way animals are treated, stay with us for Animal Concerns of Texas. Coming up on today's show, we have a conversation with Colleen Patrick-Goudreau, who's the author of a number of books, an acclaimed speaker, and host of the podcast Food for Thought. That's coming up a little later on the show. First, some news.
In response to a lawsuit filed by wildlife advocacy groups, a San Francisco federal court approved a settlement requiring the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Wildlife Services to implement numerous protections for wildlife in Northern California, including a ban on traps and aerial gunning in designated wilderness areas. The settlement also requires Wildlife Services to analyze the environmental impacts of its killing of coyotes, bobcats, and other wildlife in 16 counties in Northern California. The ironically named Wildlife Services is a multi-million dollar federal program that uses painful leg hold traps, strangulation snares, poisons, and aerial gunning to kill wolves, coyotes, cougars, birds, and other wild animals, primarily to benefit the agriculture and livestock industries. Under the court order, Wildlife Services must provide by the end of 2023 an environmental impact statement that analyzes the effects and risks of its wildlife killing program in California's North District. Pending completion of that study, which will include robust public commenting opportunities, the court order imposes several measures to protect wildlife in the North District. Last year, Wildlife Services reported killing 1.6 million native animals nationwide. In California alone, this total included 3,893 coyotes, 142 foxes, 83 black bears, 18 bobcats, and thousands of other creatures. Non-target animals, including protected wildlife such as wolves, Pacific fisher, and eagles, are at risk from Wildlife Services' indiscriminate methods. The victory is a result of a lawsuit filed in June by the Center for Biological Diversity, Western Watersheds Project, the Animal Legal Defense Fund, Project Coyote, the Animal Welfare Institute, and Wildlife Guardians. Now, thousands of California wildlife will have much-needed reprieve from the federal killing agency.
In late October, the New Vienna Dairy Farm in Iowa was implicated in causing the deaths of 60,000 fish in two local creeks. The fish, comprised of several different species, were found dead last month, sparking an investigation by the Department of Natural Resources that traced the origin of the pollution upstream to the New Vienna Dairy, which is considered a small operation with only about 300 cows. Penalties will likely be imposed against New Vienna. Earlier this year, another Iowa farm named Meadowvale Dairy was ordered to pay $160,000 in fines after violating the Clean Water Act on 12 occasions by allowing waste from 10,000 cows to enter tributaries of the Big Sioux River. Throughout the U.S., animal excrement from factory farms has contaminated groundwater in 17 states and polluted 35,000 miles of rivers in 22 states. The president wants to weaken the Clean Water Act. Since taking office in January, President Trump has made eliminating federal regulations a priority. His administration, with the help from Republicans in Congress, has often targeted environmental rules it sees as overly burdensome to industry. To date, the Trump administration has sought to reverse more than 50 environmental rules, according to an analysis by the New York Times. 25 rules have been overturned, and the rest are in the process of being eliminated. Clean water and clean air are obstructions to corporate profits.
The Center for Biological Diversity reports that a U.S. district court in New Mexico recently ruled against three livestock industry plaintiffs that sought to eliminate protections for nearly 60,000 acres of critical habitat designated in 2014 to help recover the state's endangered jaguars. Jaguars disappeared from their U.S. range due to deforestation, draining of wetlands, and killing to protect livestock and other pelts. The last female jaguar in the U.S. was shot by a hunter in 1963 at approximately 9,000 feet in elevation Station in the east central Arizona's thickly forested. Jaguars disappeared from their U.S. range due to deforestation, draining of wetlands, and killing to protect livestock. The last female jaguar in the U.S. was shot by a hunter in 1963 in eastern Arizona's thickly forested Mogollon Rim, which adjoins the Gila National Forest in New Mexico. The district court's ruling upholds protections under the Endangered Species Act that prevents the federal government from rendering the habitat unusable for jaguars, leaving intact the critical jaguar habitat in the state's southwestern Boot Hill region. In addition, approximately 700,000 acres were designated in Arizona, but those were not challenged. In the case pitting the New Mexico Farm and Livestock Bureau, New Mexico Cattle Growers Association, and the New Mexico Federal Lands Council against the defendant, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the court affirmed the service's finding that designating critical habitat is essential to the conservation of the jaguar species. Michael Robinson, a conservation advocate with the Center for Biological Diversity, states that this is a big win for jaguars to keep living in parts of New Mexico's remote and rugged borderlands without additional threats to their survival. He added that the government should have protected far more habitat, including further north into the vast Gila National Forest, but without the desert country along the border, jaguars would have no chance to even make it further north. Despite the ruling, jaguars would still be cut off from habitat in the U.S. in the event that new fences or walls are erected to supplement the hundreds of miles of border wall that already exist. At present, New Mexico's Boot Hill region is free of the so-called pedestrian barriers, which are impenetrable to wildlife much more than to people. To learn more about the jaguar and its recovery, visit www.biologicaldiversity.org.
Coming up next on ACT Radio, we'll have a conversation with Colleen Patrick-Goudreau, who's an award-winning author of 7 books, including the best-selling Joy of Vegan Baking, The Vegan Table, Color Me Vegan, and others. She's an acclaimed speaker and host of the podcast Food for Thought, which was voted favorite podcast by Veg News magazine readers. Colleen has appeared on national and regional television programs, including the Food Network, CBS, PBS, and Fox. And she will be the guest speaker at the Vegetarian Society of El Paso's Compassionate Thanksgiving Dinner on November the 18th. Stay with us. Our conversation with Colleen is coming up next. Joining us now on Animal Concerns of Texas, Colleen Patrick-Goudreau. Thanks for being with us on the show, Colleen.
Thanks for having me. It's really good to be here.
Colleen, could you start out by telling our listeners how you got involved in animal issues and veganism?
Sure. Well, it goes back many years now. I grew up in New Jersey. I grew up not knowing anything about animal issues. I mean, you know, I was a typical person who loved being around animals. I'm still that vegan. You know, not everybody who's vegan loves to be around animals, but I always loved to be in their presence. I always appreciated them. I always wanted to help them, but I didn't know all of the issues, of course, that I know today. My parents didn't tell me. It's not exactly, you know, on the written on the sides of the cages at zoos. It's not on the packaging of the meat, dairy, and eggs we buy. You know, I just had no idea. And luckily I was curious enough, and luckily other people had written books about it and started making at that time films about it. And so I read Diet for New America when I was about 19. I think I had known one other vegetarian, you know, kind of that situation, and just was completely blown away by what I read in that book, and stopped eating land animals, but continued eating meat, dairy, and eggs. And then again, my eyes were, you know, still half closed, but I still pursued more information. And several years later, and several books later, I had the awakening, which was that the meat, dairy, and egg industry, and really all industries that exploit animals, you know, what the common denominator in all of them is violence. It's violence against the animals. It's violence against the people who are doing the exploitation and the killing. And it was just this awakening and this awareness that I had that I didn't want to be part of it. And so with that, I just kind of very naturally wanted to share this with other people. So I became vegan, and then I started doing outreach. I was doing outreach and education. I was doing some things when I was vegetarian, but it really increased when I became vegan. And that's how it started. I started tabling. I belonged to a Unitarian church at the time. Yeah.
No, me too.
I know. I remember that, Greg. I do. I remember that. And I was doing street TV. I was showing Meet Your Meat on the street and handing out Why Vegans. And it was really, I love the interaction with the community, because I found that even though you get some jerks who pass by and say some, you know, insensitive things, the interactions you have with the people who genuinely want to engage with you and ask you questions was enough to keep me going. I started teaching cooking classes because I realized that people have the desire, but they don't have the answers to the questions they have. So, you know, yeah. So people who say, I don't want to be part of this, but then, of course, what do I eat? Where do I shop? What about family? So it's really been, my journey as an animal advocate has really been about what's the need, what's the gap, what are my skills, what do I love, what can I bring to the situation? And I'm still asking that question, and I'm still finding that there are gaps to be filled and work to be done.
I agree with you, and I've sort of changed my outreach into doing cooking classes because I feel like the best way to bring about the world we want is to make other vegans. And then when we reach the tipping point and veganism is the majority mainstream, then the zoos and the circuses will all disappear as well.
Yeah, and I would say, you know, make other vegans, I'll just broaden that. It's raise consciousness and change the way people see animals and think about
right,
them. And
yeah.
So if we can change the way they think about them, that they're not here for us, that they're not here to be exhibited in a, you know, behind a cage or an enclosure or whatever they want to call it, then you know, look what's happening with circuses. I mean, people yeah. are not comfortable with seeing animals perform in such a way. Of course, a lot of that has to do with the undercover investigations, the protesters, but I also believe very strongly in laws protecting animals and working with, you know, local legislators and passing laws to make these things illegal such that it makes it impossible for them to do it. And then, oh, guess what? There's money to be made in ways that don't hurt animals. So I think it's multi-pronged, and we need everybody in all areas doing this work.
It makes me a little uncomfortable, though, when Tyson invests in a vegan product like Beyond Meat.
See, it doesn't make me uncomfortable. and the reason is I saw someone phrase it this way, and I thought it was beautifully phrased, because some people, you know, were saying that the company who they invested in, the vegan company they invested in, was selling out, and the reframe was, no, Tyson is buying in. And I love that, because uh-huh. they're recognizing, same thing, right? They're recognizing that there's money to be made, because these are businesses. None of these companies are altruistic, you know, philanthropists. They're doing it for the money, and that's okay. We live in a capitalist society, like, that's okay. But if they realize they can actually make money without hurting anyone, that's the win. And
yeah.
if they realize that they can buy these companies that are already successful, you know, the work has been done for them, at least started, then I see that as a hopeful sign.
And they've got a larger audience at Tyson than they do at Beyond Meat.
Exactly. Yeah. And then they can, and the price can come down. I mean, it's all about economics. You know, people want things that are convenient and economical. And if we can bring that to them, I mean, you know, those who are going to do it and can afford it and, you know, want to buy the convenience food, because I always say you don't have to buy the convenience foods. I mean, all, you know, convenience foods, whether it's vegan or not, are more expensive than whole foods. People just want to pay for convenience. But in paying for that convenience, or even the whole meat now that's happening, especially with what's happening in laboratories and the future of that, then it means that it's going to be more accessible to more people. And that's a good thing, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, Colleen, I think one of the things I was picking up on or reading between the lines as you were speaking was sort of a theme of courage. And I think that's one of the things I don't think about too much, even on this show, is it takes courage for people to delve a little bit deeper into learning about, you know, how our food mm-hmm. is made and how, you know, how that elephant got to those 20 cities as part of a circus tour, or, you know, how those puppies ended up in the pet store. So it is hard for people to take that next step. And I know I was sort of in that same boat too, slow to look at each next level of animal protection and uncover the unsightly layers to see what was really going on. And so part of what your work does is really help empower people through those cooking classes, and what Greg does and what the Vegetarian Society of El Paso does here is really try to give people the tools in order to act on that courage. You know, it took some work to get them to that point. So I'm curious, you know, one of your most recent books one of your most popular books is The Joy of Vegan Baking. Did you find that it seemed like there was such a resounding response to that? I guess baking is really an important thing to get people to move towards a vegan diet.
Yeah, sugar. Yeah, it is the most popular. It is amazing. I mean, it's 10 years old now. The publisher just came out with a 10-year anniversary edition. And so, yeah, so, you know, I love what you said, because it does take courage. It is so difficult to look at what is really, really awful. And that's where, ironically, my hope also lies in the people who say, don't tell me, I don't want to look, because they know they're so close to, they know that if they just have one more thing that pushes them over the edge, they're going to be compelled to change. And that's where my hope lies, is that it's the change they're afraid of. Mm-hmm. It's the change, because they don't know what's on the other side of it. They don't know, what is it going to look like? What is it going to mean for me? What is it going to mean for my family? What is it going to mean for my social life? So what I try to do is say, I'm here to catch you, first of all, and you're not alone. We've all been there before, and we have the answers for you, and there's ways to do it, but you have to at least look. And I'm here, you know, it's hard, it's okay to cry. You have to at least look, because you know you're going to change. Like, you know you're going to be compelled to change from that. So I love what you said about courage, because it does take courage. And you know, people who say that people who don't look, they're so insensitive. How can they not look? My answer is, they're so sensitive, they don't want to look because they know it's that painful. So that's on our side.
Right.
If it were easy, if it were a no brainer, people wouldn't have a problem with eating animals or contributing to these industries. Then we wouldn't have anything to fight for. So anyway, I love what you said. But yeah, sugar. I don't know. These are traditional. it's about normalizing veganism. I mean, I've worked really hard to do that. I still have a long way to go. I think all of us can do better at normalizing vegan. I don't like language that makes it sound like we're some kind of separate entity or, you know, cult, or I don't want to be part of an exclusive club. I want this to be normal, right? And so The Joy of Vegan Baking was all about that, was normalizing.
Well, and it's interesting you say that, because a lot of times when I go out to eat lunch with my colleagues, I'll say, I want the vegan version of whatever, and they'll say, I want the normal version. And I always say, no,
exactly.
Mine is the normal version. I go, yours
exactly.
is not the normal version.
Right.
Mine is normal. So I agree that it's all a matter of perception. And so I always try to point out that it's completely 100% normal to be eating a plant-based diet. And people all over the world have been doing it for thousands of years and been healthy, happy, and not causing all this harm to animals and to the planet and to themselves. And I really do like, to your quotes, you know, shareable quotes that you have. I try to post those on my office door here at the university so people can walk by and just reflect a little bit, like, on what beauty and wonder animals really have and how complex and wonderful their behaviors are. So I think that's important, too, pointing all of that out.
Tell us about your tours in other countries. I understand you've taken people on tours of Italy and Thailand. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that's another part of my work, is to create community. And it's been clear now, I've done two conferences here in Oakland, Compassion in Action conferences, I call them. And they're weekends full of workshops and talks on, you know, just being the best advocates we can be for the animals and being the most effective spokespeople, but also being compassionate towards ourselves and creating community. So a lot of people who've come to the conferences then come on these trips with us, which, again, just create and instill community. I really do believe that the thing that makes the difference for someone staying vegan or not is not feeling like they're not part of the status quo, or not feeling ostracized, not feeling like they're part of something bigger than themselves. And again, just not feeling quote unquote normal as part of the larger society. So community is such a huge aspect. Now, we love to travel. And I've done a number of travel episodes just on my own travel, and I'm always a little surprised. Again, this is always the work that I do, and I'm happy to fill in these gaps for people, where people say, oh gosh, going to such and such place, that must be really difficult to be vegan. And I always talk about, look, if you're looking through one lens, if you're looking through the lens of, you know, meat consumption, then you're only going to see that when you look at going to, say, Scotland or something like that.
Right.
But if you put on a different pair of glasses, and you look at it through the vegan lens, you see things that you weren't looking for when you were only looking through that other lens. So I've been talking about travel for a long time, and we just decided to start a few years ago. We did Italy twice, and now we did Thailand, and we have Vietnam coming up. And, I mean, people are talking about these being the best trips they've ever had. And so they're with like-minded people. Of course, we take care of all of the food. We go to beautiful locations, and, you know, there's culture, there's history, there's people, there's animals. We try, depending on the countries we go to go to animal sanctuaries to support the work that they're doing. So we went to 3 when we were in Thailand, which was incredible. And so we're just kind of seeing how this goes. And so far, it looks like it's working.
I was going to say, I bet, you know, I think the funny part is many people in America here at least expect the rest of the world to be eating the way that we do or, you know, that they do. And the funny part is so many other countries are more advanced when it comes to animal protection or eating more plant-based foods because that's what they've done for a long time or because they realized it was easier on the land or for the variety of reasons. So it's funny that people, you know, sort of come with this lens that they're going to need to go to they're going to go to Vietnam and it's going to be a big steak and, you know, macaroni and cheese on the side. So a fair amount of education just getting people to realize how many other kinds of foods around the world are much more open to plant-based dishes.
Also, on the other side, the other side, it's that just because they're not vegan friendly isn't the fault of veganism. So we go to Scotland and, you know, we eat a lot of French fries and we eat a lot of onion rings. And it's not because if we weren't vegan, the alternatives would be so much healthier, right? I mean, so I was talking to a friend after we came back from Scotland the second time, and I said, yeah, I just want greens. I don't even want to look at anything fried. And she goes, oh, yeah, I figured that would be like that because she's not vegan. And she said, I figured, you know, being vegan in Scotland, that's what it looks like. And I'm like, what do you think we would have had if we weren't vegan? It wasn't like, you know, we'd have basically hamburgers and fish, and it's, you know, all fried. So, you know, and again, obviously we had salads and we were fine. But, you know, the point again is that just because there's not like vegetables in places around the world, that's not the fault of being vegan. There are a lot of other things going on there. And we then kind of up the game when we travel and say, no, I'd like that. And I think, oh, people are actually looking for some different things more than just the, you know, the typical things we've been used to. So anyway, so it's kind of both going on at the same time.
Yeah, I was just going to say that when I was in Italy last summer, I was very surprised to find at the train station they even had vegan options. They had vegan carrot cake, vegan baguettes. I had traveled in Italy before and done basically the same thing that you said, just ate like salad and French fries or asparagus, depending upon the season, you know, for every meal. And so I was like really shocked at the change. And then I saw something in Paris. They're opening 3 totally vegan grocery stores.
Wow.
And I mean, that's kind of amazing in a city that's so well known for their cuisine that they have the demand to open 3 new vegan, totally vegan shopping centers.
So Colleen, you're going to be joining us here in El Paso next weekend to give a talk at the Compassionate Thanksgiving Dinner. What can some of our attendees sort of expect to hear when you talk to us?
Well, I'm vacillating back and forth between talking specifically about the holidays because they're right upon us, and I think that's really important. And it's all about, no matter what the focus is, it's going to be on you know, our family, our community, what these holidays really mean. One of the things I talk about when I talk about these holidays, and you'll probably hear this when I come, is that we have lost the meaning of and focus on the symbols when it comes to holidays so much. We've forgotten what the meanings of the holidays are, and we focus so much on these symbols. And so, for example, at Thanksgiving, you know, dead turkeys have become this symbol of Thanksgiving. But if you go underneath what is Thanksgiving really about, it's obviously, no one would say it's about the turkey. I mean, I think people would go deeper and say it's about community, it's about camaraderie, it's about the harvest. You know, when we talk about the fall and the food, I mean, it's about things much deeper than that. Again, just kind of people being able to reclaim their values, feel confident about that, reclaim the meanings behind these holidays and these family gatherings, and finding ways to be able to communicate with our loved ones so that we can be part of the gathering, and there are ways that we can work with our family members so that we don't feel like we're in a really uncomfortable situation, and so that they don't feel like they've been asked to do something that's unreasonable. So just trying to find middle ground with family, especially around the holidays, I think is so important. So I'll be talking about that.
Oh, good. That's
great.
I liked your blog about Thanksgiving and the many myths that have grown up around it. So it would be nice to try to dispel some of those myths.
Okay, I'll do that.
Okay.
So, Colleen, can you tell our listeners where they can go to learn more about all of the activities that you're talking about today, all the trips and the blogs and the recipes?
Sure. Everything is at my website, which is my name, which can be annoying to spell because it's long. My background is French. So ColleenPatrickGaudreau.com, but JoyfulVegan.com. The podcasts are there. The trips are there. Any speaking engagements I have, all of the videos, blogs, everything is there on the website.
Your beautiful cookbooks, too, as well.
And my cookbooks. Thank you.
We've been talking with Colleen Patrick-Gaudreau, the award-winning author of a number of books on veganism and cookbooks, and acclaimed speaker and host of the podcast Food for Thought. Colleen will be with us on November the 18th as our guest speaker at our Compassionate Thanksgiving dinner. Learn more about that by going to vscp.org. And we thank you so much for your time today, Colleen.
Thank you, everybody. I appreciate it so much. Looking forward to seeing you.
If you'd like to hear more from Colleen, join us for the Vegetarian Society of El Paso's Compassionate Thanksgiving Dinner. This talk will be on Saturday, November 18th at the Radisson El Paso Airport and features a vegan buffet. Reservations are now open, but they close on Tuesday, November 14th. So make your reservations now at vsep.org.
Also at vsep.org, you can vote for the Best Vegetarian Food of El Paso Awards. For the past 5 years, VSEP and EP Veg Snob has held a Best of Veg contest among our local eateries. Vote today for your favorites by clicking on the link you'll find at vsep.org.
And if you'd like to listen to some of the past shows of ACK Radio, you can find them at ktep.org. Just click on the listen button. Until next time, I'm Tom Linney.
I'm Greg Lawson.
And I'm Liz Walsh. For the animals, the earth, and a healthier humanity, thanks for listening to Animal Concerns of Texas.